Anyway, as she kicks him, after he left town, I just tagged along. Seemed better than unleashing him on an unsuspecting world. Yeah, now she runs the place, her and her other weird sisters hand in hand. Now, Davy, I let you play with your toys downstairs, don't I? She hates computers, you know. David whispers in a paranoid aside to Mike. Dearie, as long as they keep you out of my hair, they're fine with me, she says, getting up. Okay, I've had enough of this. You'll be quiet or else. Girls, it's time we cook, or we're doomed to another night of pizza, and heads for the kitchen. The other women rise and follow her. Lois asks as she leaves, anyone for a refill? All three guys nod. She mutters, I had to ask. She brings the scotch bottle and a couple of bottles of soda and puts them on the central table. Anything else I can get you guys so you don't have to get up? No, we're good for now, says David. She glares at him and heads for the kitchen. More drinks are poured, mainly single malt scotch, with and without soda. They all light cigarettes. David mutters something about never dating another Irish woman. From the kitchen, I heard that, bellows Mary. David tops off his drink and whispers, see what I mean. After eating, they sit around the big screen display. The massive TV screen shows multiple windows with images from security cameras around the club. In one, there is a shot looking down onto the main entrance. In others, there are images of the crowd building in the club below. Finally, Todd says, well, I guess it's time for us to get to work, and he and the women head for the club floor below. Likewise, Mike says he wants to get some work done. David remains scanning the security cameras. Time, 8 p.m. At about 8 p.m., Tom and Bob dress up and douse themselves generously with the aftershave lotion on the theory that if a little is good, more is better. Reeking of a vaguely spicy combination of soap, aftershave, cigarettes, and the distinct smell of formaldehyde from the unwashed new shirts, they bundle up and run to their car for the short drive to Mulroan. Bob carefully shifts into gear, the transmission lurches, and they motor to Mulroan in silence. Tom and Bob park their car in the nearly full lot diagonally across the street from the club. Both look anxiously and eagerly at the club across the street and the crowd of people their age queuing to enter. Tom says, well, stud, with the new shirt and jeans, are you ready to go meet some ladies? I am indeed, dude. Show me the way. Oh, yeah, before we completely forget why we're here, you do have that photo, right? Says Tom, remembering their real purpose. Yeah, it's in my shirt pocket. Let's go. They hop out of the car, lock and slam the doors, and traipse cockily towards the entrance, each doing his best to pretend that this is really a night out clubbing. They join the line. After a few minutes, they're at the door. The bouncer, Sean, checks their IDs, which he swipes through a reader, and taps a button on the desk, thus alerting Todd. Sean recognizes Tom and Bob from the motel that morning. He says, welcome, guys. The coat room's just over there, and points to a long, narrow room just next to the entrance, with rows of hangers already full with the bundlings of the assembled patrons. Thanks, says Bob. By the way, have you seen this guy? He's a friend of ours, and he said he might be here either last night or tonight. Bob shows him Mike's picture. I don't know. Kind of looks familiar, and I can't say for sure. I see a lot of people. He might have been here last night, answers Sean uncandidly. Thanks, says Bob, and they enter and turn into the coat room, where they take off their jackets, stocking caps, gloves, and scarves. These get shoved into pockets and coat sleeves. The coats join a collection of about 100 already hung in hopes for the night to come. There's a mirror at one end of the room, into which they both peer anxiously. They pull out their combs and try to reverse the tonsorial effects of stocking caps. Both tuck their shirts in, look at one another, mutually nod, and give the thumbs up sign. They exit the coat room and walk hopefully into the main part of the club. While Tom and Bob are preening in the coat room, Todd, at his pulpit, pulls up the scan of their driver's licenses, along with the door security cam shots. With other cameras, he watches them as they hang their coats and prep before the mirror. Todd freezes a few headshots and stores them on disk. He looks across the club to where they're now entering the main room. He watches them standing near the entrance, gawking at the dance floor. Tom says, holy shit, will you look at this place? Say, man, I don't think we're in Iowa anymore, jokes Bob. So what's our plan? Well, first things first, let's go get some beer at that bar over there and then start circulating. Someone might tell us something we can sell to Pete. Mike's working on his laptop in his apartment when his cell phone rings. He pulls it out of his shirt pocket, opens it, and reads the incoming text message. It's a message that says, go to David's apartment quick. There's something on the computer screen he needs to see. Mike puts the laptop in hibernate mode and hurries down the hall to David's apartment. He knocks and enters without waiting, slamming the door behind him. He quickly leaps over the back onto the couch, saying, I got the message. What's up? Why didn't you just call? David is poised on the center couch, facing the screen, typing on the keyboard. Oh, I was using the keyboard, and it was easier just to type and send it rather than pick up the phone. I got a message from Todd downstairs. Security spotted the guys who were probably the ones from the motel this morning. Todd says he's got a positive ID on the cell phone one of them has. It was the phone that called Pete. Oh, crap. I was hoping this wouldn't happen, but I guess it was inevitable. Now they know for certain where I am. Where are they now? He asks, seeing several windows with security cam shots on the big screen. I'm just opening a connection to Todd's webcam. Mike sits quietly and watches as the large LCD screen lights up to display a group of new icons, toolbars, and message windows, and a window appears with a webcam shot of Todd behind the bar on the floor below. The LED on David's webcam webcam on the wall switches from red to green. "Hey, David," greets the voice from the animated figure in the window on the screen. "Our friends from the motel walked in a little while ago, and you might want to take a look." Sean says he recognizes them. I looked myself, and they sure seem like a match to the pictures from the motel. "I've got a security cam trained on them. Check out Cam 21. With that, David clicks another icon and taps a few keys, and one of the security video cam windows enlarges and places itself next to Todd's window. It shows the feed from a group of security cameras mounted high above the bar at regular intervals. The image is focused in on two guys near the door. One is leaning to his right, speaking to the other with his hand covering his mouth. The other nods and looks around the club, then gestures towards the bar on the other side from where they're standing. The first nods in agreement, and they head towards the bar. "How can you see them so well? It's dark and smoky down there," Mike asks. "I use multiple night vision cameras with digital interferometry to correct for the distortions. The final image is a composite, but more or less in real time. I can read the hands on their wristwatch with this rig if I want to," says David proudly. Tom and Bob get a couple of beers at the bar and begin conducting their investigation by meeting people, mainly girl people. After their second round of beers, they're both feeling like suave private detectives and begin acting the part. They pass around the picture of Mike to a group of girls they've joined. One of them says, "Yeah, I've seen him. Last night. Kind of difficult to forget that hippie haircut." "So what can you tell me about him?" asks Bob. "What are you, some kind of detective?" "Yeah, we're working on a drug case," says Tom as Bob suppresses a laugh. "Ah, so that explains the haircut," as she nods knowingly to her friends. "Well, I don't know much. I saw him at the bar. Then after David introduced the band, he and David were talking. They stood over there. I could see that the bartender poured a really big glass of really expensive scotch. They talked for a while, then they went upstairs," answers Sally. "Who's David? What do you mean by upstairs?" asks Bob. "Hey, man, this is David's. He's the owner of Morone. Up on the top floor. Look, you can just barely see the balconies. There are a bunch of apartments way up there. This guy you're looking for seemed to be a good friend of David's, but I don't remember ever seeing him here before. How do you know David?" "Oh, I see him here all the time." "So how do you get up there? See that door over there? There's a freight elevator behind it. It goes up to the top floor," she says, pointing. "Ever been up there?" "Oh, yeah, but that's another story," she blushes. Then one of her friends calls her away, and Bob turns to Tom and says, "I think we hit pay dirt. Pete's gonna love this." They gaze up at the balconies, and Bob says, "I wonder what it's like living up there. Would that be what they call a penthouse?" "Yeah, I think so. I need a penthouse. Must be a real chick magnet," says Bob. "The only penthouse you're getting is a magazine. The only magnet's gonna be on a refrigerator." Mike and David watch Tom and Bob talking to Sally. They see her handing the picture back to Bob and talk to him, nodding. Then they see her as she points to the balconies above, then gestures towards the door to the freight elevator across the room, at which David exclaims, "Crap, looks like they've done an ID on you for sure." "Kind of looks that way," replies Mike. Tom says to Bob, "Hey, looks like the entertainment's about to start. We probably won't be able to hear anything while the band's playing. Let's go get a table and order some beer until their set is over. Maybe the waitress will know something." "Sounds good." The band takes the stage and begins plugging in their equipment. The entertainment that night is a battle of the bands, mainly local crews, but some from other parts of the Midwest. The first is the group from Mason City, a garage band basically consisting of five tall guys in headbands and bandanas. Two are singers, and they wield hefty electric guitars. One is a drummer with a somewhat saucer-eyed, dazed look. One has a saxophone, while another straddles a keyboard. Because there are several bands, the show begins early at 9 o'clock, rather than 10 o'clock, which is traditional. The entertainment starts with the usual blast of pyrotechnics, smoke, and Mylar confetti shot from air guns. One of the bouncers, Gene Shell, fills in as MC for the night. The crowd cheers when the playing starts and the dancing begins. The floor of the balcony shakes under Mike, who's come out to watch. He wonders if this old building can take it. However, above him, he sees the dim outlines of the 2-foot timber rafters and the 2-inch thick iron stabilizing rods with the giant turnbuckles, and realizes that this place would probably take a Force 5 tornado, let alone a few hundred bouncing dancers and a 5-piece garage band from Mason City. The place smells like a mixture of Dial soap, testosterone, and Clarisil. The keyboard thunders away. The drums pound and the guitars belt out shrill but synced chords. Mike watches the show, scotch in one hand, cigarette in the other. After looking over the scene below, Mike returns to David's apartment. "What are they up to now? I could see them from the balcony until they got directly underneath. Looked like they were heading for a table." "Right, that's where they went," replies David as he cues up the webcam and says to Todd, "Have Mary serve them and check them out. She's seen the photos, right?" "She has, but I'll have her take another look," replies Todd as they see him signal to someone off camera. "Can you see them?" says Mike. David hits a few keys and a new window with a different security camera pops onto the screen. "Oh yeah, and we'll be able to hear, too. Here, I'll focus in on them as Mary talks to them." He types some more keys and the camera narrows in on the would-be sleuths at the small table. Meanwhile, in the window showing Todd, Mary enters the picture and waves at the webcam. Todd shows her the photos on his monitor. Todd looks back at the camera, keys his mic, and says, "Mary's on her way now. I gave her a basket of peanuts with a wireless mic in it." "Good. We'll listen in from here," says David as he turns to Mike and says, "We use wireless headsets and all the people on the floor, mainly to save time sending orders back to the bar. But they're two-way, so so I can talk to anyone from here.